Hello, everyone, and happy May. We are shaking off the doldrums of winter. We have our eyes set on summer. It is the unofficial start of summer with Memorial Day weekend. So hopefully we're all staying warm and wearing our sunscreen. But welcome to the May episode of the ACO Peacecast podcast series. As always, I am coming to you from Columbus, and I am joined today with my esteemed co-host, Scott. How are you doing?
I am doing great. We're broadcasting from Lake House, and we have our grandson with us this week, and he's 3 years old, so you can imagine the activity that we are in the process of. And so May is Mother's Day, and we wish everybody Mother's Day. Woodrow Wilson put it in as a national holiday, so we want to recognize all our mothers. As a pediatrician, I think that mothers are the best, and we really want to celebrate the motherhood and their babies, and want to make sure that they're always taken care of. So we're really looking forward to today.
So, fun fact, Scott, do you know where Mother's Day was founded?
I know who as a president was Woodrow Wilson, but mm-hmm. Not sure where it was founded.
So it was founded, the birthplace of Mother's Day is a small town called Grafton, West Virginia, which happens to be the town of which my mother currently lives in. So there is it was Anna Jarvis, who was called the creator of Mother's Day, like the first person to say we need a day to celebrate our mothers. And her birthplace was in Grafton, West Virginia. There's a little house that has a museum in it. But yes, that is where my mother is currently sitting, probably on our back patio. So there you go. Fun fact for the month of May.
That's wild, because interestingly enough, there is a Cyrus, West Virginia, and it is up in the northeast corner of northwest corner of West Virginia, and that's kind of where my heritage actually came from.
All right. What fun fact does our special guest have for us? Because I guess we should introduce them first. So we are very excited to have our guest on with us today. Some of you may have met her at the Columbus conference that we had back in March. Sure, we'll go with March, as the inaugural recipient of the Nancy Beery Memorial Scholarship. So congratulations. She is currently finishing up her OMS2 year and taking a break from board studying down in Florida at Nova Southeastern to sit with us. Welcome to the podcast, student Dr. Bridget Rogers.
Thank you so much. So excited to be here this evening.
So how is board studying?
It's a lot. Definitely exhausting. Definitely a much needed break this evening.
Good. So are you a question taker? I'm going to sit and read my textbooks, listen to lectures. Are you a solo or a group studier?
I am definitely a mix of everything. Big on the UWorld TrueLearn question banks. I recently invested in a whole little setup that I take to the library with me. I have like a laptop stand and then a keyboard and a mouse and the Anki remote and all of those things combined. All the extras get me through.
Oh my. I was a question bank person at Starbucks. That's where I was. I just go pull up at a Starbucks. It got to the point where the one nearest my med school, they would actually watch my stuff for me if I wanted to go like grab dinner somewhere, like go across to like a fast food place. They would keep my table and watch my stuff for me, and I would come back. So
I so remember. Wow. I had two children going into med school, three children coming out of med school. I was I had a VCR tape collection, believe it or not. I think there was like 25 cassettes about everything there was for osteopathic medicine. It was just, it was unreal.
And for our listeners, you can Google what a VCR looks like. And they play,
creepy old guys on the set tonight.
They played these things called VHS cassettes that you actually had to rewind before you'd return them to your Blockbuster. You can also look up what Blockbuster was, because they're also
Right. Oh my God. Set me up to die, man.
So anyhow, first off, welcome and congratulations on being our inaugural Nancy Beery Scholarship winner. So hopefully, I mean, I guess it wasn't a complete surprise to you because we did have to get you to Columbus in order to receive it. But was it a surprise when you got the notification that you've been selected?
Definitely. It was an immediate, you know, calling my mom, screaming on the phone, could not believe that I was selected. I think it was just such an honor to see that. And then learning more about the award as well at the conference, I think made it even more meaningful for me as well. I didn't totally know the entire backstory of the scholarship in itself. And I think that connection to cancer was just such a meaningful connection between the work that I do and the story surrounding how the scholarship has now come to be. So really just such an honor to be selected and very excited to have that honor and to go to Columbus for everything. Definitely fun.
It was definitely a pleasure reading your scholarship application. You know, part of the selection committee, I screened all of the scholarship applications. And yes, you do have done amazing work. Every once in a while, I will read scholarships. Like, I'm currently reviewing some scholarships for the AOF. And I'm like, I don't think I would get into med school these days. When I look at some of the things, I'm like, the stuff that you all are doing in undergrad and the stuff that you're doing and the way that you take life experiences and turn it into something really positive and meaningful. Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about your scholarship application and the work that you do?
Definitely. So what I centered my application around is the work that I'm doing at A Moment of Magic, working on our Express Create Heal program. This program is a psychosocial initiative that we're integrating into hospital systems through our nationwide chapter-based system where we have college volunteers. The program itself started as volunteers dressing up as characters and going into the hospitals. And now we've expanded out through Express Create Heal, providing a targeted psychosocial intervention for the pediatric cancer community. So the program itself makes mental health and mental wellness something a lot easier and more accessible to talk about. What we recognize within the pediatric cancer community is that there is a lot of burden that these families hold. And so making mental health simple to talk about and easily approachable is really important. There's so much burden surrounding a pediatric cancer diagnosis that creating ways to make it as easy as it is to talk about brushing your teeth. That's how we want mental health to be for these families. And we are also finding that the systems themselves are overextended. So while we have incredible child life services, incredible therapeutic support, there is a real gap when it comes to that baseline foundational skill building. So that's really what Express Create Heal does. Over the course of 1 to 2 hour intervention workshops, these volunteers lead interactive programming with the kids where they learn how to do different things through the language of play. So a little three-year-old is going to be tough to teach them how to take a deep breath and learn about deep breathing, but they definitely know how to blow bubbles. So using bubbles, we're able to teach them about deep breathing and how that's a technique that they can use if their bodies are feeling overwhelmed. The program itself is that much more important to me, being that I'm a pediatric cancer survivor myself. So a lot of what has gone into its inception and its creation and implementation now has been directly fed by personal experiences, both that of the families that we've worked with over the now 11 plus years that A Moment of Magic has been around, but then combined with my own personal experiences, as well as a team of mental health and medical professionals who helped us create the program.
Yeah, that is absolutely amazing. Scott, looks like you were going to get ready to say something.
Yeah, it's, you know, it brings back a lot of memories when I did my pediatric oncology rotation in my residency. It was, you know, really heartfelt to see the children go through these protocols, if you will. And you know, they were protocols because they were not necessarily cures by any means. And then as I remember, one patient came in and she wouldn't walk on her leg. And I told my attending, I said, I think she's broke her leg. She goes, how did she break her leg? It's like, you know, what's going on? I said, I don't know, but she won't walk on it. So to me, and I was a nurse before as a physician, and that was what the orthopods used to tell me. The orthopod said, if they don't walk on it, they don't use it, it's broken until proven otherwise. And sure enough, she had broken her leg. And it was just like, I remember my attending looked at me. He's like, how did you know that? It's like, I didn't, but they're just a kind of a rule. But they all had their own situation. They all had their own mental health, the way they looked at it. You know, kids look at cancer in a totally different way than adults do. They take this on as a full-on challenge. And, you know, in this, especially the children that I've dealt with in my own practice, between the brain cancers and the blood cancers, the bone cancers, things like this, they're so adaptive that I've learned so much from the children, how to be so adaptive to what life gives you, what life challenges you with. And then many of them just really survive so well, and they have so many life lessons. It's just, it's truly, truly amazing.
Yeah. I still remember my rotation. I don't do a lot with oncology anymore, although we do have, you know, your occasional congenital, you know, leukemias or hepatoblastomas or things like that. But just the emotion watching every kid ring that bell when they finish their treatment. And just that, you know, the sense of pride and seeing it in the, you know, and you know, you talk about, you know, whole families too. Like, I remember seeing like the, and I see this in parents when I'm sending them home from the NICU, the like cautious optimism where, you know, in the parents' eyes where they're like, okay, we've made it through, you know, they're going to remember a whole lot more about this than the child is going to. They're going to be processing a lot more, but maintaining that, you know, that joy for their child is just as they celebrate those milestones. And just, I just remember feeling so much for them, which is why I could never do oncology. I would not be able to do it.
In fact, I had two brain tumor children came into my practice about 3 weeks apart. And I called my good friend, my hematologist oncologist, and I said, you know, I'm talking to you way too much. Because I like you, but on the other hand, when I'm talking to you, that doesn't buy well for my patients. But he's been a great friend of mine, and just, in fact, that's the one I rotated with when I was a resident, and just a super individual. But I know that I had a child who had a tumor, and a brain tumor, and he's actually was still in my practice when I saw my practice, and he's doing very well. But you know, the things that you're taught as a resident going in through those different types of, you know, no, I wasn't ever going to be a hematologist oncologist, but the things I learned there, their suspicion, their gut feeling, all those things that come along were what I used as a general pediatrician. It was just really, I was very grateful for the training that I had.
So tell me a little bit, obviously the fact that this has been going for 11 plus years now. And, you know, it sounds like it started kind of small, but now you're national. And I was looking over some of the information, like, you know, over 100 hospitals during the last calendar year. One, how did you get connected into this? And then when you started it, did you ever imagine that you would be, you know, a program manager? You know, believe you're a co-founder of this nationally recognized work doing trauma-informed and in creative play-based care. And then how are you doing it as a medical student? Because that cannot be easy. So sorry for a three-part question. I tend to just spew things out when my mind starts going.
Definitely some great questions. So to start, becoming involved with the organization, I first joined at during my freshman year of undergrad. So way, way back in high school, I actually worked as a clown. That was my part-time job in high school. So I...
Oh, we will be discussing that next.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we will.
So from the start, I've always been peds-centered. It's definitely always been my calling, working with the kiddos. So yeah, I in high school worked as a clown. And then when I came into undergrad, which I actually went to the Ohio State University. So back at my old stomping grounds for the conference, I started freshman year and was looking for something to get involved with that combined all of my interests. So the performing, I was, of course, into musical theater, and then the healthcare side of things, really being passionate about the pediatric cancer community, having just gone through that lived experience. And I stumbled across our chapter of A Moment of Magic. It really was just one of those, somehow all of the pieces perfectly aligned with everything I was looking for in a student organization. So I became involved in 2019. And then from there, I auditioned and became a character. So I got to dress up as Princess Anna from Frozen and stayed super involved at the chapter level. And then in 2021, I was offered the opportunity to join the national team. My involvement was a couple of years into the establishment of the organization. So like you mentioned, we've been around for 11 years. We were first founded by Kylie, who's our founder, in her college dorm room back in 2014 or 2016. I'm going to mix all the years up, but 2020, yeah.
I think it was 2014, if I remember correctly.
Yes. So she started at the College of Mount St. Vincent. It was just her in her dorm room, and then expanded out into a college chapter system. So then, of course, I became involved and then again joined the national team. And then in that role, I was our family relations coordinator, really just having general oversight on how we're interacting with the families, really looking big picture at different initiatives, stuff like that, in the volunteer capacity still. And then again, as we were involved in these spaces and then pulling from the personal experience, Kylie and I were having annual conversations. It was a check-in that we had scheduled, and I was really bringing up my interest in addressing these unmet needs. We're at the bedside, we're involved with these families, we're a part of their journey, and really given that privilege to be a part of that as volunteers. And we were directly seeing this unmet need when it came to the mental health challenges. And so that kind of started the conversations of all of it. And I really never could have imagined how large it's become since then. Initially, my role was just working on that Express Create Heal project. And then, yes, like you mentioned, I'm now the program manager at A Moment of Magic, somehow managing to balance about 10 hours a week running our nationwide programs alongside board studying and general medical student life, trying to get research in there as well. And then also being involved with our on-campus organizations. So our PEDS club and I was part of our oncology interest group here as well. So honestly, I couldn't tell you how I do it.
It's obviously a passion of love. And I think that's what drives a lot of us as pediatricians and, you know, neonatologists, pediatricians, we're all in kind of the same vat, if you will, but we have a passion and what seems to drive us is our inner love for children and their problems. I mean, whatever those problems may be. And it's really unbelievable. It really is, because, you know, there's a lot of life and death and unfortunate situations that children have to face along with their families. And you seem to bring joy to their life every day.
Is there any time that you can remember when you started getting involved in the organization that you were like, this is what I see myself doing. I know I want to go into medicine, but I'm always going to want to be part of this. Do you have like an moment where it just kind of clicked for you?
Like you said, there have definitely been just so many over the years. Specifically with the moment of magic, a big one has definitely been being there in person, watching Express Create Heal happen. We were able to attend an event where we hosted a larger scale version of the workshop and had probably close to 30 to 40 kids across the variety of age ranges that we work with attending this one workshop. And we got to work closely with all of them. And I was able to jump around from room to room and just really see it big picture in action. And watching the children interact with the program and seeing the difference that it made throughout, watching each activity, how they were able to engage with it, and kind of seeing their light bulb moments and how they were connecting with it, that really was a defining moment for me. And then additionally, all the feedback that we get from the families, that's really what keeps me with it, is getting those testimonials and their responses of, you made us feel seen. You made us feel as though those unmet needs are being addressed, and that gap that we knew existed and we saw it, they're coming back to us and saying, yes, this is what we need, and thank you for doing this. It just reinforces for me that this is what I'm meant to be doing, and I'm on the right track here.
Great. So, you know, go ahead, Scott.
No, I was going to say, as you dress up with, as a clown, do you have a character name, or do you just kind of come in as a general clown?
Yes, my clown name was Buttercup. I work for our company's Twinkle Town Entertainment based on Long Island. So that was always so fun. We weren't the scary clowns, though. We didn't have like the white face paint and the big red nose. We were like cute, swirly glitter and sparkles. I had like a pink flower nose, and I would wear suspenders that were kind of like strawberry shortcake colored.
Okay. Now, what was your specialty? Like, were you a balloon animal person? Were you a juggler? Just overall making the kids laugh? What was your strong suit?
I'm a big fan of the face paint.
Okay.
Super into face painting, but we would do all of it. It would be like children's parties. So face paint, balloon animals, cotton candy, popcorn. I would do a magic show that my mom would make fun of because of how terrible it was.
You could be really a bad magician with little children. I can tell you that right now.
Easily distracted. So, you know, you're talking about that a lot of this was helping to fill in gaps where families were saying that, you know, they weren't necessarily felt seen and heard or had an opportunity to express themselves in regular medicine. And now you're a second year medical student. What could medical educators be doing better about teaching students the importance of trauma-informed care, creative-based care, and the ability to use arts or things like that for expression of pain and expression of mental health, and the importance of incorporating mental health into your everyday practice?
Totally. I think a big thing at a baseline that I feel very passionate about is better integration of the patient experience into our medical education. I think that a lot of programs do a decent job of explaining what a patient interaction looks like, providing opportunities for those like scenario-based learning and the way that we have to get tested in our setting and having those standardized patients. But I think that there's something to be said about patient panels and really learning about those lived experiences and hearing about it more than just the baseline, this is what you can expect as a doctor. So that's, as a starting note, something that I think all programs would really benefit from an increase in. And then I think as well, better integration of the other specialties that have those interactive components and that do utilize those resources. Something that I hear a lot from child life specialists and from music and art therapists is that they're in these hospitals with these services ready to offer them, but a lot of the times the physicians and the medical teams don't know how to use them appropriately, and they view them as, you know, the play people, and oh, well, this person needs a quick distraction, can you help them out, rather than better integrating those partners as a key component to the healthcare team. And at least personally in medical education, in my own education so far, the only experience that I've been exposed to what is a child life specialist was when our pediatrics club invited in a child life specialist and had her provide a lecture to us explaining exactly what child life is and the importance of it and how it works. So for me, that's a huge area that I think could really benefit from increased attention, is showing what the different resources are and how to use them appropriately. Since there are the experts out there, I think it's a matter of getting them to speak to the students, because all of us are really eager to learn and want these kinds of resources. I think we're also in a day and age where mental health and these alternative methods of supporting mental wellness are more commonly talked about. So I think providing it in that more structured approach that medical education provides would be super beneficial across the board.
I would totally agree with you. I think that we miss the mark on our education because we're so wrapped up into the medicine side of it. We fall short. I won't say we don't address it. We do address it, I think, but we fall short on the social side, on the mental side, on the impact, especially in the world of pediatric cancers. You know, a child comes in for, you know, RSV, even though I don't want to make light of any disease that a child has to come into the hospital for, but there is a slight potential for a life-threatening disease with even RSV, but it's very slight compared to what we see with pediatric cancers and the impact that our treatment many times changes their figure, if you will. I remember one of my leukemic patients had to have an enormous amount of steroids. So she developed the moon face, the hump, those things that are to what a child sees as very disfiguring. Even though they're surviving their cancer, they see the treatment as very disfiguring. And so I hear what you're saying, that we need to address that area of medicine in a more holistic way.
Definitely. And it's something that could so easily be integrated, especially as osteopathic physicians. It's such a core part of what we're being taught and what we're intended to be learning, that it really comes down to just adding that additional humanistic perspective when we're talking about these things. We're taught to memorize them out of a textbook, taught to know exactly what it looks like, exactly what to expect, but then we're not shown how that impacts a person. And like you said, these things have, especially pediatric cancer, is a lifelong impact on that child, both while they're in active treatment, having, like you said, different disfigurations as a result of the treatment they're being given, but then also the long-term scars that they're left with, both physically and mentally. Those are lifelong, and with the incredible work that we've done medically to have incredible survival rates and for things to be trending in the direction that they have, I think recognizing pediatric cancer as a chronic illness and transitioning that mindset that physicians have around pediatric cancer to better address the long-term impact of survivorship, again, is something that I don't think we adequately address in medical education right now.
I feel like we still just talk about statistics, and we talk about, how to identify, the different, what they look like under a microscope. But we don't talk about things like the developmental cost, where these kids, they should be out on the playground and playing, but instead they're in an infusion center getting this treatment done. So are they embarrassed by it? Do they try to hide it? Or do you have this feeling that like there's something that they don't want their school friends to know that, like, oh, I can't come to this birthday party because I have to go get this treatment, or I'm not going to go swimming because I'd have to take my wig off. And the mental and developmental side of what life as a patient with living with cancer looks like, we don't get to learn that. And I honestly don't know if there's a, outside of what you mentioned, as far as, like, you know, patient panels and things, like, that's not something you can learn in a textbook. Like, that is, you're not going to find that in a textbook. That's going to be getting those experiences and getting to hear those stories, which I think are so important in the medical education field, to really learn about that stuff.
You know, when you talk about that, Jason, and what strikes me is what is really, to me, not given to that medical student, even to that resident sometimes, is that advocacy for the patient. Because I saw a CBS report of a child who had bone cancer, and he says, I don't know that, you know, my mother can't afford this treatment, and there's maybe a treatment for me, but I don't know that I'll be able to survive my cancer before even I can even have an ability to have that treatment. And that right there shows me a lack of advocacy for our patients. When we, I mean, what Bridget, what you're doing is to me, you're advocating for their mental health. You're advocating for their well-being. It's phenomenal. And as what we need to teach our medical students, and what we need to teach really all, across all spectrums, is how do we advocate for our patients in this world of different insurances, different treatments, and everything that we can possibly do. Because like I said earlier, we have that ability as physicians. There's a lot of opinions out there about what should be the best and what, but as scientists, we have the ability to know. And what people want from us is what we know, not necessarily what we think. And it's really, I think what drove me into pediatrics, what drove me to find the answers for my patients, be it our cancer patients, be it our, all the different patients that were maybe one of a kind. I used to say my special needs patients always wrote their own book. They literally wrote their own book. But what I felt like I was always going to tell my parents is, we're going to push them. We're going to drive them. We're going to find out the answers for them and advocate so that they had the very best life they can have.
And I think one of the things that, at least when I'm sitting here and listening to your stories and what you do, is not only are you helping with their mental health, but you're giving them permission to be kids. Even if it's just for a few hours, you're giving them permission to be like, yes, we know that we may be in a hospital setting, we may be in this, you know, infusion center, this clinic, but you're not your diagnosis. You're so much more. Every one of these children are so much more than their diagnosis, so much more than the treatment protocol. And just to have someone, especially someone in the healthcare field, come to them and be like, it is okay during these 3 hours to be a kid. And that's all you have to worry about. And I think that's what it makes, you know, a lot of the work you do just so monumental for these kiddos that get a chance to go through some of your programs.
Definitely. There's quite a narrative within the pediatric cancer space of almost a toxic positivity and this demand for a constant strength, which in part is important. I think expressing to kids and their families that you are going through something unimaginable and that it is admirable for being able to get through those things with such strength and having positive attitudes when possible. I think that's an important aspect and it creates that hope within the cancer community. But we overlook and often underplay how difficult it can be to be in those times. And when you're constantly met with that positivity of you're so strong and you're so brave, you then embody that and feel as though when you're not able to live up to that standard, you're somehow not succeeding and you're you're not getting through this. So I really find our ability to interact with the kids in that way is really important, because we're giving them that time to, yes, be a kid and just be yourself and feel whatever emotions you're feeling, and also normalizing all of the spectrum of emotions.
Yeah, which is, it's so hard to imagine the journey. It's hard to imagine, and just like figuring out how to balance that. So you're going to be heading into clinical rotation soon. Sounds like peds is definitely on the, at the top of the list. Do you see yourself going into a career in pediatric hemonc, or are you going to kind of like see where the wind takes you?
It's definitely on my radar. Something I struggle with is finding where that line exists for me of my personal passions and my career and academic pursuit. I've obviously combined the two quite a bit this far in my career, but I am still open in terms of where exactly I think I'll end up. I know for me, I like things a little bit more hands-on, and I'm a little worried that hemonc is a bit numbers and labs-based. So some other things are definitely on the table right now, where maybe it'll be a bit more procedural, but peds is 110% my whole heart.
We celebrate that here. I mean, you know, all doctors are needed, but we're pretty biased towards the pediatricians of the of the world.
That is one true story. That is one true story.
So, you know, but yes, definitely. You know, it sounds like, so I would say it sounds like you've done a better job of combining your passions with your academic and medical interests better than a lot of like my colleagues. So good job on that. Possibly better than I have over the past couple of years been able to marry all of these things together. Yeah, it is an exciting time. I know right now you feel like you're tied to your study guides and question banks, but there will come a time when you will be like, this will just be a fond memory or not so fond memory. And you'll be in mine and Scott's shoes saying, well, you know, back when I did this and I was taking the test on stone tablet and studying by VHS set and 8-track.
Very true. Very true.
Yes. All right. So what's next on your plate?
Yeah.
Other than relaxing.
Well, outside of A Moment of Magic, I'm also working on a vaccine hesitancy research project. So I've been looking at the perspectives of pediatric cancer caregivers that are involved in pediatric cancer support groups on childhood vaccinations.
Interesting.
So that's been a really incredible project to work on. We've gotten some really interesting feedback, and so in the, you know, final stages of wrapping up the manuscript, and I'll be presenting on it this Friday, actually. NSU is hosting like a student research day.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And so you said you're presenting that on Friday.
Yes.
And then manuscript is almost done. And then, okay, what's something fun that you have planned for your last summer break ever? Not to put it too bluntly, but once clinical rotations start and then residency, you will realize more and more that you'll just be going, what month is it? Where are so?
I'm already feeling that way with board studying, so that's great to hear. So I really only get about a week of a break. I take my board exams, I take Comlex on June 17th, and then my mom will actually be coming down here to pack up my apartment while I'm in that last couple weeks of board studying. And then the two of us will make the drive back up to New York. And then in that 1 week, I'm going to try to fit in everything possible.
Okay. Having made that trip from Southern Florida to, although I went to upstate New York, that is a long drive. It is. Hopefully you have stops on the way.
Yes, we did it on the way down, and we stopped halfway in South Carolina. Too terrible. And my mom's already making a playlist with themed songs to all the different states. She's okay. Super.
Go, mom. Yes, that was because I did my fellowship in Rochester, New York. So it was move from Miami, Florida to Rochester, New York. So it was drive through, stop in Orlando to go to Universal, then went and saw friends in Raleigh, North Carolina, then went to DC, then went to West Virginia, then went to Pittsburgh, then got up because it's a drive.
You know, Bridget, when you go, you're going through your third year and fourth year rotations, how do you see you taking your, if you will, your clown with you through internal medicine, surgery, OB-GYN? I mean, that's a part of your life. There's no doubt about it. And it's a part of your life that you're not going to give up. But how do you see you weaving and into the fabric of your rotations?
It'll definitely be something I learn as I go. So I'm not 100% sure of what everything will look like over the next 2 years. But something that I hope to do is kind of leave a little bit of sparkle everywhere I go.
I like that.
Which is kind of out working as a clown. Everything was always covered in glitter.
Red nose.
I mean, I will say your surgical attendings may not care for the glitter.
Especially in the surgical field.
Yes. But I do hear sterile gloves make wonderful balloons. So maybe we can create a puppy dog for your cranky surgical attending. So,
Well, there is somebody on social media who's been posting videos of himself doing balloon animals. And it's like, help me pay back my student loans. And he makes these crazy balloon animal things. So I've been thinking about that one of maybe that's okay. Right up my alley.
There you go. Yes. So my background is also in theater. I was a musical theater performer before I went into medicine. And the scrub techs, especially when I was doing like my CT surgery rotation, they could always tell when I was starting to get bored because I would start tap dancing. I wouldn't notice it, but they'd be like, oh, we're losing Jason.
A little soft shoe.
Especially if it was something where I wasn't scrubbed in and I was just like a person in the back watching. I would get so bored and I'd just sit there and absentmindedly start tap dancing and then they would make
And look at him now.
Yes. I still do it on rounds. If rounds are taking too long.
And that's why I said it's woven into our fabric. I mean, it is. It's part of our DNA, if you will. This is Bridget's DNA. I mean, this is what she's going to bring to the table, if you will, be it whatever table it is, if it's surgical or medical or you know, OB-GYN. And that's why I asked the question is how do you see in this bowl of spaghetti, if you will, how do you flavor it? How do you bring it to light? Because
look at all these metaphors, Scott Cyrus, you were full of.
Well, I look back on, like I said, I look back on my career and I think about the things that people have taught me and how I brought them forward. And, you know, I always say you're going to learn something from every rotation, maybe something to do or something not to do, but and then it informs who you are as a provider. And so
I see in the not too distant future at an ACOP conference, Bridget Rogers DO, magic and clowning for the pediatrician.
Here's just clowning around.
Here's a few things that you could do in your office. CME credit right there. So we'll make it work. The former president of my medical school, he was a magician. And at one point he taught close-up magic for the bedside, like physician at Temple University. He taught that. So there is a space for it. So there you go. Coming well, to an ACOP conference near you.
Yeah. But there's the science of medicine and there is the art of medicine. Mm-hmm. And we all bring, when we bring the art, we bring in a totally different dynamic. Because we all know the science, should know the science of medicine. We know that as scientists, we know that we're based in evidence based. But the art, how you deliver it, like I said, I've never had anybody ever ask me what my board scores were, or mm-hmm. what my GPA was, or where I ranked in my class. They cared about how I projected medicine, how I presented the medicine, how I, the art of it all.
Yes.
And I think that that's extremely important. And I see what Bridget is doing as extremely important. And like mm-hmm. I said, it becomes part of her fabric. It just becomes part of her character. And I hated to use the word character because of a clown, but because medicine doesn't clown around. I mean, don't get me wrong. I really truly know that medicine doesn't clown around, but we sure have, especially in the world of pediatrics, we sure have a lot of fun.
And, we do.
No matter what aspect of medicine it is, we're blessed and we're fortunate to be able to take care of the most precious things in people's family.
Yes. And, you know, I was going to make the pun of the art of medicine is where the magic happens, but you know that. All right. When the dad jokes start coming, that's when we know.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay. I'm supposed to come up with the dad jokes, not you. I mean, come on, really? Five kids and seven grandkids. I mean, come on, really? I'm supposed to be the creepy old guy that comes over the dad joke. And now you are. That's telling.
I know, right? So I do want to, you know, take a second because we've got you here. So, you know, Moment of Magic has expanded a lot. If, say, there's a, you know, a school or some place where there isn't a local chapter or, you know, or even let's say a PEDS club wants to do a seminar with you all. Like, how does someone go about either, you know, trying to start up a chapter if there isn't one, because to get some of this work or do something like setting up a seminar or setting up some of the programs?
Definitely. So there are a couple different avenues that we can take with that. As a starting point, our services, so the in-person programs are definitely centered around where our college chapters are, but we do offer virtual versions of all of the in-person programming. So we can always set up a virtual Express Create Heal workshop or virtual hotline calls with the characters. So if there are hospital partners, nonprofit partners that are in areas where we don't have volunteers that are local that are interested in those services, our virtual programming is always an option. We also have both AMOM Unlimited as well as the ECH website that are filled with different videos that are accessible 24/7. The ECH side of things has more educational resources, again, those more virtual formats of the in-person program, as well as educational materials for professionals. So we were able to develop a training course that really discusses an introduction to pediatric cancer and mental health and just some basics that I think are really helpful for any healthcare professional to be familiar with if they're thinking they might encounter this patient population. So that's kind of one side. And then as well as our AMOM Unlimited, that's where we have videos of all of our characters doing different crafts and story times, different interactive activities. Again, those are always accessible on the website. Then if students are interested in getting involved, there are forms available on our website that you can reach out to us and that we would partner with you to really figure out what would work best. So if that means just coordinating a one-time event, working with the students to kind of get them trained and support in doing one-time activities, or if they're really interested in going even further to establish a full chapter, we have a full system of support on the national team that would coordinate with getting the right leadership involved. We do have a dues process where to establish a formal chapter, there would be a process of becoming affiliated and getting the college system going. But all of that is available on the website.
Great. I'm going to have to look at some of that educational material. So, and I hope you have this on your CV as you're getting ready to start applying for residency. Make sure it's front and center on the, I have created these curricula and this programs, because there was not a lot of hot debate as we were reading applications as to who we thought was deserving of this inaugural award. So you are doing some amazing work, and I do want to just congratulate you. Thank you for what you're doing, because it's a time commitment and it is a mental space commitment. And to be doing that while also juggling the ever-growing challenges of medical school and still doing it with a smile on your face and a true passion for it that I'm sure will come across to all of our listeners, hearing you talk about it, but just a true passion for what you do. So congratulations and thank you for that.
It's truly what you do to set yourself apart in this world of kind of pass fail, if you will. It's truly what you do to set yourself apart, and it's what takes in what you've done outside of the realm, if you will, of medical school, but yet it's so impactful to your patient. So I applaud you.
Yes.
Thank you. And it takes the recognition from those in the field with such experience to reinforce these things for me. So thank you again. The imposter syndrome can be really difficult to hear that voice in your head. So mm-hmm. It helps to have the confirmation from external sources saying you're doing the right things.
Yes. You tell that imposter syndrome voice to shut up. You know what you're doing.
Just put it to bed.
Yeah. But I will also tell you that little voice doesn't go away, even as in attending the number of times. And I'm like, are you sure you want me doing this? Oh, yay.
You're right. I mean, because there's no way to learn everything in med school. There's no way to learn everything in residency and life. You know, the thing that really drove me as a career pediatrician was I was not going to give up. That was what I said to myself. I don't know, but I'm fixing to find out. And no matter if it was me who found out or consult who found out, no matter how deep I had to dig, we were going to find out what was going on with the patient. And so that gave me the worthiness to know that I was not an imposter. I never believed I knew it all. That was one thing I never believed. I never believed at all that I knew it all, but I knew that my resources, my tenacity, my grit, my persistence was going to find out what was going on with the child. But with that said, I think what you bring to the table, Bridget, is that side of it that says, how are they handling it socially? How are they handling it mentally? How are they handling it emotionally? And that's the beautifulness of what you are doing for pediatric patients. So I applaud you. And I think that what you're doing, we could all learn from.
Yes. Yes, definitely. And we will definitely be keeping an eye on you to see the great things that will be coming from you in the years to come. I do want to sincerely thank you for taking the time out of your board studying to sit down and talk with us both about, you know, your award and that experience and this project, this program that you have built that is just absolutely amazing resource for kids. Hopefully you don't have much longer of a night in store for you. Hopefully you have a set time that you're like, you know what? I am done studying. This is not going to be a midnight night, and you'll get some time to relax. Scott, thank you as always for adding your wisdom to our podcast.
Like I said, the creepy old guy comes in at the very last.
And then of course, also thank you to all of our listeners for continuing to tune in each and every month as we bring some excellent guests and topics your way for this 2026 year. So like Scott said earlier, happy belated Mother's Day to all of the mothers-to-be, and happy Memorial Day weekend. As we head into summer, we will see you all in June. Everyone have a great rest of your day. The ACOP PEDSCast podcast series is the official podcast of the American College of Osteopathic Pediatricians. Your hosts are Jason Jackson Dio and Scott Cyrus Dio. Edited by Jason Jackson. Original music by James Cyrus of Tulsa, Oklahoma. If you have any requests for topics or you'd like to be a guest on the PEDSCast podcast series, please email us at PEDSCast. PEDSCAST @acopeds.org